You're listening to the Fantrax Radio Network. Fantasy sports lives here.
Welcome to the Nasty Cast.
It's hard to return a monkey these days.
I'm going to have to do some more research on this to see exactly what these zombie raccoons are doing.
What good was the snow guy?
Last I heard, he had some Velcro gloves and he was hanging out with some sheep in Montana.
I do a lot of Zumba.
Y'all don't understand. I never seen so many Dominican women with cinnamon tans.
You're Macaulay Culkin and you're just running around your house.
Don't tweet me if you drink strawby. No strawby.
Zardoz.
Well, speaking of garbage, it's a Nasty Cast. Welcome into episode 159, everybody, of the Nasty Cast Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I am Nathan Dockin. You can find me on Twitter at Nathan Dockin. And joined today by Van the Queen's Hat Lee. What's up, Van?
Yes, hello, I'm here. I have my extendable back scratcher, and I have my Blu-ray double feature of Face Off and Snake Eyes, starring Nicolas Cage. And ooh, I'm ready to podcast.
I mean, we should just shut off the podcast right now and say no pod this week and go watch Face Off.
I was gonna say if you have that DVD at your disposal, why are you hanging out with us?
Have you guys seen it recently? I watched it within a couple of weeks ago, and it is glorious. It is everything the '90s aspired to be.
Yes, and just quickly to bring in Ron Rigney. What's up, Ron?
What's up, man?
Yeah,
Con Air is a good one though too.
Put the bunny in the box.
Yeah, Con Air is a good one.
That one I saw growing up, like, many, many times. Fantastic film. But I never saw Face Off until probably 2 to 3 years ago. And watching it now, and just witnessing in modern, through the modern lens, the ridiculousness of those 90s movies, like that one in particular, it's just obscene. My God, what a weird movie.
I remember watching it and thinking, what was the budget on this movie? Because they were just blowing stuff up. It was crazy. Nicolas Cage was just wearing a bunch of silk shirts, and that was it. And I looked it up, and it was some obscene number, but the movie, of course, made that money back tenfold, so it worked out. But yeah, no, it's quite a trip. So I recommend going and watching it. And the science, let's just say, is flawless in the movie.
Oh, absolutely.
I agree. Yeah. I agree, yeah.
There's no holes in that. So what is the best Nick Cage movie?
Ooh, that is a good question. I have to go with Wicker Man because that's a personal favorite. And by best, you mean worst. I think a lot of people would have a different opinion on that. But in my opinion, that's it. Now, if I want to give you like a tertiary movie that he was in that was actually really good, go watch Joe, which came out a couple of years ago. And this is in... Nicolas Cage is part of his career where he's taking on every role which comes his way because he has a lot of trouble with the government and money. So he made that movie on a low budget, but it's actually really good. Like, it was well acted, it was well scripted, it was a pretty good movie. Hmm. And it's just called Joe.
Is it about former Nasty Cast podcast host Joe Osachi?
It's actually about former Vice President Joe Biden, but played by Nicolas Cage. Oh, I would pay so much money to watch that movie.
I was actually just looking up his IMDb to try and think about a movie that actually was good that he's been in. I'm a big fan of
National Treasure. National Treasure I thought was good.
I haven't watched
8mm.
No? Hmm. 8mm was okay.
Drive Hard or Drive Angry.
Yeah, that was all right.
One of them. Leaving Las Vegas was great. That was a fun movie.
Yeah, that was really hard. I think I saw that in the theater.
Apparently, he's going to play the character of Grug in The Croods 2, whatever that is.
Yeah, he plays that in the original because I've seen that with my kids. It's a DreamWorks.
Oh, like an animated movie.
Yeah, it's like a caveman setting. He's a dad, I think.
Oh, that's right. And there's that movie G-Force, which is about hamsters or gerbils
hamsters.
Or something.
Yeah,
and he plays one of them apparently.
Now that I did not know.
Along with Will Arnett and Penelope Cruz.
We buried the lead here because we've actually got Owen Wilson in studio for this episode. Owen, what did you think of City of Angels?
Wow.
Oh, he's impressed. Wow.
just Nick Cage, wow.
Wow. So, hey, what's your favorite Nick Cage movie? Tweet us at NastyCastPod. You can also find Van at Manly Van Lee, and Ron is at The Real Made. You can also email the show if you are not on the Twitter, nastytraxpods@gmail.com. That's T-R-A-X. If you like the show, if you want to support us in any way, you can rate and review us on iTunes. That's a nice, easy way to help us out, you know, or wherever else you listen to us. You can also go to Patreon, patreon.com/nastypod, and you can give us cash money, cold hard cash, which we will receive and then, you know, just swim around in. No, it's obviously all digital, but that's a great way to support the show. You can give as little as a dollar a month, and we will love you a long time. You can also get access to our Slack channel, where you can talk to us 24/7, and some other free swag will come your way shortly as well. And also listen to Fantrax Dynasty Baseball, which is our Dynasty-centric show. We shall be recording immediately after this one, so we have that to look forward to. But on today's show, a lot to get to. We've got some Ohtani talk. We've got Jake Bowers coming up, some bad Miggy news, some bad Agon news. He's gone. Bullpens, waiver wire, much, much more. So let's dive right in. And, man, I guess I'll throw this one to you first. Very sad news. Shohei Ohtani, he may or may not need surgery and may or may not return this year. He also may or may not play until 2020. Who freaking knows? But he is injured right now, regardless. And to add, I guess, more injury to injury, because it's not really an insult. But Garrett Richards also left today's game. So just not a lot of good news going on with your Angels right now, Van. But what are we making with Ohtani? And I don't know if you have any insider information on Garrett Richards or not, but Shohei Ohtani, what do you think is going on there?
Well, let me start off the top of the show by saying Richards apparently is a hamstring issue. So breath of relief, to be honest.
Okay, yeah.
As long as it's not elbow, shoulder, anything related, I'm okay with that. I mean, obviously hamstrings suck, but if it's a light hamstring strain, that's hard to say. Not a big deal.
I always screen my ham.
Screen that ham.
I put my ham through an extensive screening process before I purchase.
A mesh screener.
I always ask my ham what his favorite Nick Cage movie was before I eat it.
So hopefully that's good news with Garrett Richards. Now with Ohtani, I proceeded to say a lot of F words. Fart. When that went down. Pretty disappointing. Fooey. However, that's PH, but maybe I guess if you want to say with the F, you could do it that way. You could be a rebel, you know, like how.
What about Hong Kong?
When you're really mad, it could spell, you spell it with an F, just to emphasize it.
I'm looking up Hong Kong Fooey because I think you have a point there. Is it? No, it's PH.
Is it? Yeah, it's my bad.
Number one super guy. I can't remember the rest of the song. Hong Kong Fooey. Also, this is like right in line with Shohei Ohtani because he's Asian, so we can stereotype him as a ninja, so it all works out.
Perfect.
Oh, disgrace! But disappointing.
What's
news.
That thing that you always reference where they kill themselves with a sword?
Seppuku, the ritualistic act of seppuku, yes. Disgrace to myself! This is horrible.
I can't tell. I can't tell if that's Newt Gunray or if that's Asian accent. Like it's either one. Yeah, it's interchangeable.
Oh, also, real quick, I got his friend, Newt Gunray's friend. I got a toy, and his name is Rune Hakebo or something like that. And so I have Newt Gunray and friend on my desk.
That's awesome.
Okay, baseball. Go ahead.
I was just gonna say there was a recent episode of Westworld, which I love that show, but somebody did commit Sudoku or whatever that thing is. No, it's a very serious moment, and all I could think about was you and this stupid podcast.
So they were able to figure out all 9 lines of it?
That's amazing.
That's cool.
Yeah, we're in a lot of facets. Okay, Shohei Ohtani. Yeah, so it's a grade 2 strain, which is not good, but it's also not the worst. So I think Richards actually had a grade 2 strain, and they decided to try him with the rest and rehab, and he had that whole thing last year where he didn't pitch a whole lot. But he's pitched really well this year and appears to be healthy. The velocity is good, so there is a chance that he doesn't have to undergo surgery. However, there's also a chance he does. If he does undergo the surgery, there are a couple scenarios that I think could occur. First, they treat him like a pitcher. They don't even consider his offensive prowess. If they do that, he's out 12 to 18 months. He misses all of next year, doesn't pitch until 2020, like you mentioned. That sucks. I hope that doesn't happen. The next scenario is they treat him like a fielder. Like, for example, Gleyber Torres had Tommy John surgery, he's a shortstop, so he does have to throw, but not quite as much as a pitcher. So his recovery time is, instead of being 12 to 18 months, is 9 to 12 months, whatever it may be. He comes back, he's fine, he can hit. So if that happens, we get Ohtani back, you know, middle of next year, maybe at the end of the season, he can bat a little bit. The third option, which I don't foresee happening, but I'm going to put it out there just in case it happens and I sound smart, is that they treat him like a hitter, not a fielder. Because a hitter doesn't need to really use the UCL all that much anyway. So if they do that, technically the rehabilitation time could be 6 months to 9 months. So if that happens, he could just be hitting next year. And we could use him in that capacity, he just wouldn't pitch. I think the most likely outcome is they treat him like a pitcher. They treat him with kid gloves because he's so valuable and so cheap. And we don't see him until 2020 if the surgery happens. If it does not happen, I could see them just letting him hit the rest of this season, not pitch, and then maybe try pitching a little bit down the road or try pitching next year. So there are a lot of outcomes here, and I think if you're a Shohei Ohtani owner, in a redraft league, you just kind of hang on and hope for the best. In a dynasty league, if you're in it, you might see if you can get something for him. If you're out of it, hang on to him. There's just a lot of outcomes to look at here, so I think there's no real true wrong way to go about doing this, would be my short answer. That's very long.
Yeah, there's a lot of moving parts to this, and it brings up a unique point. Van, I think you hit on all angles of it, but it's odd because we've never had to deal with something like this where it's a guy that pitches in, a guy that hits consistently and needs the Tommy John. I mean, you know, we talked about this in the offseason too. You know, something came up about this being damaged anyway or being an issue anyway, and so it's something that they kind of saw coming down the line, but I would think that they would still want to keep his bat in if they can, and from what I'm seeing here, they won't really make a concrete decision on it for at least another 3 to 4 weeks, and I'm thinking that, you know, with the way that their season's kind of going now with Garrett Richards out, you know, if they still think they have a shot at making the postseason, I think they would want to keep his bat in there if they could and just kind of rest him from pitching, even though they do really need his arm. But I don't think it's necessarily, you know, with him being 23 years old, I don't think they were expecting him to kind of hit his prime and hit his stride as a pro this year. He's been insanely good, but, you know, as a pitcher and a hitter, but I don't think that they're going to push him through this because there's really no need to. You know, you invest in something like this, you invest in this guy coming over with all the hype, I think you treat him with kid gloves. So I think if they think they have a chance to be in it, like you said, Van, I think if they can, they'll keep his bat in. But if not, I think they'll treat it like a pitcher and they'll handle him with kid gloves. And you know, like you said in the report, he may not even pitch until 2020. I think that's a pretty realistic scenario given the investment that they made on him.
Yeah, it's kind of a refreshingly unique situation, just because, yeah, we haven't seen the two-way player have to be treated in certain ways. So, yeah, I think it does depend on whether the Angels continue to be in it, which, I don't know, as of now, it appears that that's the case. I haven't checked the standings in a while. I assume the Angels are still killing it, right, Van?
Well, they are, but they're also in a division with the Orioles, the Mariners and the Astros, who are way up there. I think they're six and a half games back, but they're also 5 or 6 games over 500. So it's kind of it's a wild card spot right now, but we've also seen teams collapse at this point in the season. So they've got an outside shot at the division, but I do think they're a wild card team. Particularly if they can, you know, get some pitching to help out and, you know, maybe fill in some innings, because the problem is we're going to have Skaggs, Haney, and now Richards, all three probably missing some innings as we go through the season because they're all coming off of very few innings the previous year. Mm. And now with Ohtani out for virtually the whole season, potentially, there's going to be a lot of innings they need to fill. Jaime Barria has been a godsend, so it's great they've got him, but I think there's going to have to be some outside acquisitions to help out with that, and I think that's certainly going to happen because they have a little bit of payroll flexibility coming into the trade season anyway.
Yeah, so I think it depends largely, you know, they can play it by ear then, you know, given their situation, but yeah, given the long-term value of Ohtani, it would definitely behoove them not to push him back into anything. But if he's just DHing, I mean, that's such a luxury to have him as a hitter. You don't even have to throw a ball. It's perfect.
Yep.
So you don't have to worry about that elbow. So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they were able to squeeze some value out of him in that fashion.
Okay, so you guys know at least a little bit about, like, late 90s Attitude Era professional wrestling. Well, every time I think of Ohtani or, I guess, virtually any Asian player, all I can think of is that those two wrestlers, Kai and Tai, Taka Michinoku, and Funaki and their weird like Japanese song. Go look it up on YouTube because it's so racist, but that's all I can think of whenever I see them.
Wow. No, the extent of my wrestling knowledge is like Stone Cold Steve Austin and Goldberg Smith. Yeah, Berg, that one.
Or Goldust.
Goldust. Stardust.
Yeah.
Mankind. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He's my hero.
Well, these guys were on the show, but they were like buried on the. These were not important people on this show.
Yeah. All right. So, Ron, we're going to shoot you this question first because about your raise.
Oh, I'm glad you put question on the end of that.
Yeah.
Oh, I got a little scared there.
Yep. So, some good news. Jake Bowers was called up by your Rays, and they to make room for him, they DFA'd my beloved Brad Miller, who is more like Bad Miller, and they ended up trading him to the Brewers for G-Man Choi. So, let's talk about Bowers first. He had a 784 OPS at AAA before his promotion, just 5 home runs, but 10 stolen bases. So, what do you think about Jake Bowers?
I think so far, and I actually got to see him play a little bit Saturday and look just kind of as advertised. I mean, I don't think he's going to be a huge power guy here. I mean, his home run totals in 2016, 2017, 14 and 13 bombs. He's going to drive in some runs. That lineup's a little bit better, I think, than what people think. And if him and Adames can come up and kind of be as they were thought to be and have spots in that lineup, they'll be able to score a little bit. I think they'll get some sneaky runs there. But you know, he's hitting .308 now. He's got a .379 OBP. He's only got one homer in 29 plate appearances. I don't look for him to have, you know, at his peak, maybe 20 homer pop. It might be stretching it a little bit. But you got to like the fact that he walks at a 12% clip now, and he's striking out right around that 20% range, which anymore isn't a big deal. But overall, I think he's, you know, what exactly they thought he was going to be, solid defense. I did get to see Saturday. Him and Carlos Gomez, I don't know if you saw the highlight, but they both went for a pop-up in foul territory, and they had a groin-to-groin collision.
I saw that.
They scissored each other?
They did. Pretty much, yeah. It was one of the most awkward, weird things I've ever seen. Cargo ended up making the catch. It was a great play. So check it out if you haven't seen it. But, yeah, I think he's a textbook Rays first baseman. I think Loma was kind of the difference, you know, last year because he's more of a power guy. At least he was last year. But I think Jake Bowers is a guy that, you know, he fits that lineup perfectly. A little bit of flexibility. They might, you know, at some point put him in the outfield. I don't know about that. But the first base job he seems to have locked down. They have CJ Cron there. They can throw a lot of guys different, you know, DH and mix and match. You know, the Rays do it ever since Joe Maddon was there. But overall, I think I was impressed with him. Saturday play discipline was pretty good. He roped a nice little double in the gap when we were there, had a couple hits. He has a couple hits today. They played early today, so he went 2-for-4. So overall, pretty impressive, but, it, you know, kind of as what they thought he would be.
Yeah, you know, I think he's going to be kind of a sneaky good player. You're not going to get a lot of flash out of him, but you're going to get some substance. He feels like the Willy Adames of first baseman, really. I mean, just a guy who's going to provide some numbers but not, you know, blow you out of the water with any statistics. But I do like him a lot, and I think he's going to be a good player for the Rays to have up now because they kind of need to start plugging some of these guys in there so the lineup isn't quite the black hole that it could be. So I like it. I hope he stays up the whole season, and I hope he continues hitting like he is, because right now he's slashing .273, .360, .545. I think that slugging comes down a bit, but the .270, .360 marks, I think, are legit. I mean, he does walk 12% of the time, so he's pretty good there. I guess my big question would be, now that Brad Miller's gone and they have G-Man Choi in there, do you think if, you know, G-Man Choi accidentally commits an error or something, he then has to commit the ritualistic act of seppuku?
Well, I just want to say that G-Man Choi is definitely no Hesop Choi.
Okay? I was going to say he's the second best Choi, in my opinion.
Okay, yeah.
To Hesop.
Yeah.
Hesop, do you ever, there's an old clip of him plowing over Scott Rolen because he was running, and he was a big boy, Hesop Choi.
He was a huge dude. Oh, my God.
He ended up hurting Rolen at first base. I don't know why Rolen is at first base, but he was a Cardinal. And Rolen got hurt. And now the whole point of the story is that one of the reporters went up to Scott Rolen and said, "How bad are you hurt? How are you feeling?" And Scott Rolen said, "Son, I hurt so bad I can't even reach across the table to get the ketchup. And boy, do I love ketchup." And that's my favorite Scott Rolen quote of all time.
I'd like to throw in that in 12 games at at the major league level, G-Man Choi struck out 43.8% of the time. So
he's just putting him where he wants him to be, setting him up.
Yeah.
I don't know. Out of all those Choi's, I prefer Le Choi. That's my favorite soy sauce.
It is good soy sauce. I like it. If you're going to buy soy sauce, don't bitch out and get low sodium. It's got sodium in it. Just get the normal stuff.
That's the point.
Yes, exactly. You want as much sodium as possible. Just suck every ounce of water out of your body.
Make
people
your heart
died,
so
actually,
angry
from doing that.
Having too much
you know
sodium.
That? It's like somebody on a dare just chugged like a giant jug of soy sauce and he died because all of the water in his body just went.
Well, he died happy. I can tell you that.
Yeah.
Full of soy sauce. Sodium.
So anyway, G-Man Choi and Brad Miller are both in the minors right now. So not going to contribute anytime soon. Well, I shouldn't say anytime soon, but not immediately. Anyway.
What team did Miller go to? I already forgot. Was this the Brewers?
The Brewers, yeah.
That's what I thought. Okay. Yeah. I mean, not a great opportunity for either of these guys. So you're not going to see much out of them, I don't think. Miller has obviously the best chance to make an impact, but I don't see. He's been bad. I just don't see a lot of impact in that bat anymore.
Yeah, at least Miller does have some defensive utility where they can move him around, you know, so he's got that going for him. But, you know, it's not like Jonathan Villar is having an okay year. You know, they got kind of a pretty solid rotation in the outfield there,
pretty,
I guess.
Pretty crowded lineup altogether, though, especially infield.
Okay, but yeah, I mean, Eric Sogard is on the roster. He's not good. Brad Miller can overtake Eric Sogard. So, but still, you're probably looking at NL-only leagues for any value there. But yeah, I do think that Jake Bowers, he's definitely worth picking up in at least 14, 15 team leagues and deeper, especially on base leagues. Because those stolen bases are going to be sneaky. And there's only, like outside of Will Myers, maybe, can you guys think of anybody else who, as a first baseman, is really going to steal you many bases?
Like Bellinger, maybe, but that's about it.
A few. Yeah, boy, is he really. Nobody
that's going to get you more than like six or eight other than Bellinger, I don't think.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in a roto league, Jake Bowers could be pretty sneaky valuable. So moving on to the Mets. We got to talk about the Mets. Adrian Gonzalez was released by them. He had just a 288 weighted on base with six home runs on the year. Dom Smith time in the NYC. Ben, we shall throw this to you first. Are you buying the Dom Smith anywhere?
I'll tell you what. If I was interested in Josh Bell without all that flash, I would be totally set with Dom Smith as my first baseman. I think he's fine. I just don't see a whole lot of, anything going on with Dominic Smith. I mean, he could be a decent average hitter. He should be eventually a 300 hitter, but he showed last year in the majors that he couldn't hit at all in 200 plate appearances. Somewhat small sample size, so hopefully he rectifies that and can bat, you know, at least 250, 260. Not a lot of power in the bat, no speed. I feel like I'd much rather have Bauer. And if I'm stuck with Smith, hopefully it's a really deep league, 15 team plus, because I just don't think he's going to produce enough value to be worthwhile. But it's worth taking a shot just because he does have a good hit tool and maybe will grow into some power as it goes along. So I'm definitely more excited for him long term than I am short term. I just don't see a lot of anything coming on with him in this first year, maybe two.
I always think of James Loney when I think of Dominic Smith.
That's a good one. And
James Loney was useful for there for a few years at fantasy, but he was one of those guys that he's more kind of your corner infielder if you needed that, or maybe in a deeper league. And that's kind of what Dom Smith is here. Hit tools there, not a lot of pop. However, last year somehow he managed to hit 9 bombs in 49 games when he got the call up last year. So I'm not sure how that happened. Only hit for .198 when he was up, was hitting .260 this year. So the average was actually a little lower than you'd expect for him. Cause I think Van, like you said, you expect him to be kind of around 300. Walk rate was up about 4% this year. So you got to like that. Strikeout rate was down, but was still hitting just .260. So, I mean, a deeper league, I guess, but not really a whole lot he's going to be able to do for you. I think he's going to be better in real life than he is for fantasy purposes.
I don't even know if he's going to be very good in real life, but yeah, between Dom Smith and Jake Bowers, I'm definitely going Bowers. A lot more interest in him. I mean, Smith, even in, you mentioned the .260 or whatever average he was hitting in AAA. you got to remember that's in the PCL too. This is like a hitter's haven. Yeah. He's only hitting 260. And looking at his splits down there too, just a 663 OPS against lefties. So he might even be like a part-time bat. You know, he'll probably sit against lefties. Maybe he'll platoon with good old Joey Bats there. We'll see how that shakes out.
Well, real quick too, Peter Alonso is hitting 307 with 15 bombs and a 438 OBP at AA. So don't sleep on Pete Alonso either.
Yeah, and they just said they're going to call him up to AAA any day now. So he should at least get the jump up to that level.
Yeah, there you go. So some hope on the horizon for you Mets fans out there. Let's see. So you could be looking at Jake Bowers or Dom Smith to replace Miguel Cabrera, who sadly is out for the season with a torn biceps tendon. So, Ron, we know you got some guns. Have you ever torn a biceps tendon?
I have not, but I have friends that have, and it's a painful injury that I've seen pictures of. When you tear that, it's a huge bruise, and it's strange looking. But yeah, it's something that, you know, I've torn a hamstring before. I don't know if that's anywhere similar, but that was probably the worst pain I've ever felt in my life, including blowing my knee out. But Miggy Cabrera, you know, it's one of these things where obviously redraft, you can cut him loose. But the only share of Miggy Cabrera I have is in a dynasty league that I've had him for a few years. And I traded for him a few years ago because I had a shot to win the league, and I won it that year. It was kind of his last year as Miggy, I guess you could say, a few years ago. But you got a decision to make in dynasty. I mean, you know, is he somebody that we're kind of thinking, you know, is this going to kind of be the norm now as far as him, you know, with the injuries he's having to battle off? This is 2 years in a row. Now, the injuries are not related. So, I mean, I guess that's a positive thing, but it's kind of makes you wonder. And he was a big bounce back candidate this year, and he was actually hitting really well. I think he was hitting like 299. Had the power was down a little bit, but I mean, he had a nice slash line. But he was useful. But I think he was kind of living up to that bounce back season. But I don't know if it's a guy that I'm going to necessarily keep in that dynasty. If I need that roster spot, I might cut him loose and let somebody else scoop him up. But it's something in a dynasty, if you own him, you really got a decision to make as far as what you're going to do with him.
And I think that'll depend, of course, on how many keepers you have. If it's a, you know, a 20 keeper, major league keeper and 20 minor league keeper, yeah, I think you hold on to him. But if it's, you know, keep 6 to 10 people, sure, maybe you've got enough pieces to drop him. This year, you were right, the average was good, the on-base percentage was good, power was way down, 3 home runs and 157 plate appearances. He did miss some time earlier in the year for injury. He's doing kind of the Pujols thing where we're in that part of his career where he's just going to continue fading and continue making a boatload of money. Now, he's also maybe he's his actual age. Maybe he's 35, so he does have a few more good years in him. Or maybe he's doing the Pujols thing where he lied about his age and we're actually seeing an older player on the decline, and this would make a little more sense. I think this injury is actually going to be good for him. If this keeps him out, maybe he can work on some conditioning because he's kind of a chunky fella. He can get in a little bit better shape, come back next year, and maybe we'll see, you know, old flashes of him. He'll go back to, you know, the 18 to 25 home runs and a good average in OBP. If that happens, you've got to be super excited as an owner. I'm not going to bank on it. I think last year is probably a little more likely than what I just said, which last year he had 16 homers, hit 250, 329, 399. Hopefully it's a little better than that with health, but they're going to have to start monitoring him more. He's going to have to DH a lot more often than not. And I just think we're on the downslope of his illustrious career. And that's disappointing, but it just kind of happens. So evaluate him wisely and don't overpay for him, and you might get some value out of him. But you're also going to have a second piece to be there for when he's injured or when he's really slumping.
Yeah, I'd definitely shop him around in a dynasty, but you know, obviously depending on the depth of the league. But before I would straight up cut him, but yeah, you might not find too terribly much value. It's hard to sell him to a rebuilding team, you know, as a player who's going to be out when he's 35 years old, going to be 36 next year. So that's kind of a tough sell. So probably not too much of a market for Miggy. Hopefully you can cash in a little bit on the name value, but yeah, not great things this year. His ground ball rate was way up. His 40% in 2017 is up to 55% this year. And we know as players age, they tend to have a harder time getting the ball off the ground. So that's just making things worse. That's going to make it even harder for him to hit for power moving forward. So he might just be kind of an on-base guy.
Well, so, and what I'll say too is, okay, so we'll take our league, for example, the prestigious Dynasty Baseball League. I'm clearly in a rebuild phase. I think I'm 14th or whatever. Got a ton of prospects on the way. A lot of them are up this year and playing. You know, I wouldn't be opposed to making a move for Cabrera if I could get him for 75 cents on the dollar, because as I start to improve next year, if he comes back and he is healthy, I could sell him with success and his name recognition for probably more than I paid, because obviously whoever's selling him now would be at a very low point. So there's a little bit of value recuperation here, but it's going to take some, you know, savvy finesse to get it to where you really get value out of him. So I would consider it. I'll look at whoever owns him and see if maybe he wants to take an older player off my hands that I could, that who is playing well, that I could see if I could get a little bit better value out of Cabrera next year for.
That was going to be the name of this podcast, actually, before the Nasty Cast came up, was the Savvy Finesse Cast.
Good. Nice.
I think that describes us very well.
It does, like, indeed.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's finesse this break, shall we?
Come on, Barbie. Let's go party.
Nasty. Nasty.
All right, welcome back to the Nasty Cast, everybody. We are ready to talk about a couple of bullpens, one new one and one old favorite or unfavorite, depending on how sick you are talking about it. So we got the Astros. Mr. Rondon, he got 3 saves in 5 days. So let's see, who are we on? Van, let's throw it to you first here. What do you make about this Astros situation moving forward? We got Ken Giles in the fold too, Devenski to worry about. We've even got the Astrocock on that team. Who are we looking at for saves?
I don't think I'm going to change my statement that I made a couple weeks ago of Ken Giles probably leads that team in saves, but he's clearly not an elite option. Rondon had 3 saves in 5 days, and then they turned right back to Ken Giles to get a save on Tuesday, which he got it. Giles hasn't given up a run or blown a save chance in many, many opportunities. He's looking pretty good. I don't know. I think it's a committee right now with Rendon having a little bit of an advantage, but I also think Ken Giles gets back in there and they're just kind of comfortable with that role. He's the name for it, and I think he just keeps the job, quote unquote, the rest of the year. But this is not going to be he gets 20 saves for the rest of the season situation. It's going to be he maybe gets 10 or 11 and then a couple other guys get some vulture saves throughout.
I think at some point, though, the Astros have to get tired of going through this scenario every year with Ken Giles. And the fact that they have to pull him out of the role and then they give you back to him and he goes out again and then at the end of the season he gets it back. I think they want a little more solid guy there that they can count on. And so it wouldn't surprise me if Rondon led in saves if Giles falters again. But it also, too, with the, you know, with the abundance of outfielders they have and abundance of middle relief guys that they have, you know, we mentioned Devenski, we mentioned the Astrocock. Colin McHugh is another guy that's kind of in that mid relief role that's got some really solid numbers too, and so it wouldn't shock me if they made a deal for somebody and brought in a guy that's a true closer to compete or put in front of Giles. I know they did that with him, but they could go shopping for somebody else out there as well. So there's a couple of good guys in Philly. You know, they went that route with Ken Giles, but there's a couple of good guys at the back end of that Philly bullpen that could possibly be had if they find themselves out of it. So I think if they make any kind of big move, I think it's going to be from the outside. But other than that, I got to go with Rondon because he's lights out so far. And Giles is always doing the back and forth with being solid and then getting pulled out of the role.
You know that Ken Giles has actually not blown a save this year?
Doesn't surprise me. I feel like he's probably come in some 4-run lead games and blown those. But, well, no, because that would still be a blown save, wouldn't it?
He does have a loss.
Okay.
So, but yeah, not a blown save.
That whip and ERA are high, though. 4.76, right. 1.24.
The crazy thing is his walks are – he's got a 0.79 walks per nine right now, way down from his career. Like, he's always kind of struggled with command. But so it kind of I mean, obviously, we've seen the theatrics. He's punched himself in the face and all that. So that, you know, you can see why you wouldn't want to be relying on him as your closer with that kind of stuff still going on, despite, you know, some of the numbers like the his FIP is 1.91, his ERA is 4.76. So those two are not matching up by any means. So I do think that better days are ahead for Giles, even though I'm not, like, it's pretty well documented on this podcast, I'm not a huge Giles fan, but he might not actually be a decent buy low right now. There might be some people who are just totally off board with him now, thinking Hector Rondon is the guy. So I might even try to buy low on Giles. I'm not necessarily sure that he'll lead the team the rest of the way, but I do think that he will get enough, like if you're in a deeper league, to you know, warrant owning him for sure. But I would be holding on to both Giles and Rondon at this point. And I would give Rondon the slight nod long term because he has been locked down and he hasn't been punching himself in the face either. So there's that. So moving on to our second bullpen, and it's the White Sox. How excited are we? I guess this pisses me the fuck off. I'm sorry. Now it's Joaquin Soria again after I just bitched about him, like, undeservedly losing the closer role several weeks ago. Now all of a sudden he's this lockdown closer. Why did you pull him in the first place? What the hell are you doing? I don't know. Somebody talk about this. I'm done.
Go ahead, Ron.
I don't really have a whole lot to say. I'm, you know. It's the White Sox. I will say, though, as I dug into the numbers here a little bit, this gentleman, Jace Fry, who's leading the team in holds with seven, has some pretty solid numbers across the board, a 0.89 whip, 2 ERA, 11 Ks per nine. He's got a save. But, yeah, it's I'm not sure why he got pulled from the role either, because to me, Joaquin Soria, that's why you bring him to town, is because he has that closer experience, more so than pretty much anybody else that you have in the bullpen. And we've talked about this bullpen before. I mean, you guys got guys sitting there like Chris Volstad, who's been around for years upon years. Nate Jones was the guy that we were all behind a couple weeks ago, and he's sitting there with an ERA over four. He's gotten blown up. And so, I mean, there's just nothing that I really want anything to do with, except, like I said, if I'm in a holds league, I might scoop up Jace Fry. That's about it. But other than that, I mean, it's just so wonky what they're trying to do, but I still hold the theory as well that they're trying to showcase some of these guys to move them out of town and get some prospect pieces.
It has to be something like that, because it's just been bizarre, the weird carousel they've had here. And, you know, Soria is good enough to be the closer, so let him be the closer. I think he obviously gets moved at the deadline if he's still pitching decently, which he is right now. Jones has been a disappointment. I think it's a little bit, maybe not health, but just getting back in the swing of things because he's been hurt so much. I still like him somewhat long term, because I think he'll be, if Soria gets traded and Jones is still there, I think Jones is the closer next year. But this Jace Fry kid is actually, like you said, doing pretty well. I don't think they'll give him very many save ops because it'll make him cost money. So I think he's going to be the holds guy for a while, maybe the next couple of years, but he could turn into a viable, good relief pitcher. And his name sounds like he's some sort of like do it all spy / race car driver. Like from the, what was that old show, Johnny Quest? Like, that's what it reminds me of when I hear his name.
I can see that.
I used to love that show, Johnny Quest.
Was there a monkey in that? No, I'm thinking of Speed Racer.
Yes, Speed Racer. He had like, I don't know.
He had the old white dad, like Race Bannon, I think was his name. And then there was the professor guy.
That's right, yeah.
And then like the Indian kid was his friend with the turban.
Yes.
It's all coming back.
That was good stuff. I don't care about the curly fry. It makes so much sense for these teams to, yeah, just showcase Soria. I don't know why you deflated his value by pulling him from the closer role anyway. 10.44 K9, 1.80 walks per nine, 324 ERA. He's got five saves in a row. Fantastic. Why were you screwing around in the first place, you freaking morons? God. Could you tell that I dropped Joaquin Soria in a couple leagues because I owned him like freaking everywhere?
I figured you did, considering that reaction.
You're a little salty like the soy sauce.
Yeah.
Yes, and what's even worse than that is we're moving on to the waiver wire, and not to, like, spoiler alert here, I guess, but we're going to end the show with Clay Buchholz, which pisses me right off because I hate Clay Buchholz. I'm about ready to quit this podcast right now. This baseball is just, we've got Max Muncy like running all over the league. What is going on? I don't like this season. Sam Gaviglio, he's great, right? 3.66 ERA over 32 innings, which is five starts and two relief appearances. Van, you buying Sam Gaviglio?
boy, I don't know what to think about Sam Caviglio. He's been pretty good, but I feel
like... reminded me of an old character from the podcast that we did like maybe once on the show, Trucker Jim. And he starts every sentence or every statement with, "Boy, I tell you what, I don't know."
I just don't know.
That's like, what is that radio show that was popular across the country? Bob and Tom?
Bob and Tom, yeah.
Yeah.
There are a few things in this world I hate more than that radio show. And they have one character on there who I can't for the life of me remember his name, but I don't know what the joke is with him. But he always says, "I swear to God."
That's Donnie Baker.
Donnie Baker. I swear to God I am. And it's the most obnoxious, annoying, like it makes my skin crawl when I hear that. And it's never funny.
I drove through the drive-thru and I ordered pulled pork and they said they didn't have no pulled pork. So I stood up and put my pulled pork right in her face. I swear to God I did.
Yeah, it's like, oh boy. Let's just get back to my automotive job. But
Trucker Jim would be a huge fan of that guy.
I'll bet he would.
He was always trying to sell a boat.
Now, see, that is a good concept. I could get behind a good boat joke, but it was just poorly executed.
You could make a boat joke out of my name. Boat docking.
And he always used to yell at Randy too. I used to listen to Bob and Tom.
That's it. Randy? Yeah. Well, technically my real name you could make plenty of boat jokes about because it starts with ship. So there you go.
Yeah, band Pirate Ship. Weird name.
back to Sam Caviglio. I think he's fine to use right now while he's performing, but I think I would get off of that train the second I see some, you know, negative numbers pipe up. But right now, he's doing fine.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that. Minimal investment, I think. Ride the hot streak. But he did get roughed up a little bit by the Rays the other night. So that, you know, made me have a little pause. It was good for my Rays, but not good if you added him. But yeah, minimal investment. Once he slips up, you can dump him and move on to the next. So not a lot of risk here.
No, I'd say that ERA is misleading. He's nothing more than a streamer for me. He's got the changeup has scored well so far on pitch values, but he's got a 340 weighted on base against lefties, and his K per nine is just 4.97 against lefties with a FIP of 5. And if you look at his splits month per month, his walk minus or strikeout minus walk percentage from May to June, it's fallen dramatically from 20.7, which is really good, to 4.3, which is obviously horrendous. So, yeah, I would be trading very carefully against with Caviglio. I would only be streaming him in the greatest of matchups. So our next guy, Jock Peterson, maybe a little bit more interest in him, Van. He's got he's got 8 bombs already, hitting 287, 356, 567. What do you think about the Peterson?
I like him. I've always liked him. A bit hesitant. I never wanted to pay the big price because there was so much risk involved with his game. But this is what... If you were expecting Peterson to succeed, this is what you were looking for. Decent average, good OBP, lots of power. And I think if the Dodgers continue to maybe not overexpose him, keep him out of the lineup against most lefties and maybe even a tough righty here and there, he's going to continue hitting like this, which makes him kind of a platoon bat. But we also see like Jake Lamb, who crushes righties but can't hit lefties, and he puts up pretty good numbers for you. So I see a lot of Jake Lamb here in Jock Peterson, and I think he's going to be a pretty viable option if you know how to monitor your lineup and get him in and out of there, particularly in daily roster leagues. That's going to help a lot. So, yeah, I buy in all the way on this.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say, too. I think he's kind of becoming what you think he's going to be for the majority of his career, because he is, like you said, Vanny's just hitting .150 against lefties, and it's no secret that he can't hit lefties very well. But one of the things with these guys that really suck against, you know, one-handed pitcher or another, you mentioned Jake Lamb, is the fact that if they can counteract that with who they hit well, balancing it out a little bit, he's hitting .307 against righties. So to me, you find that happy medium there. You can live with the .150 against lefties because, you know, he's going to go against, obviously, the majority of the league is going to be righties. So you're going to get a lot of production out of him. And like you said, if you manage your roster effectively, you might have to sit him maybe once, twice a week against a lefty, and that's okay if you have enough roster space. So I think it's not a surprise what he is. And I think that, you know, if you have him, I think his average, I don't have it in front of me, I think it's something around like .287, something like that, which for me, for Jock Peterson, especially if he's hitting .150 against lefties, I think that's a pretty solid number.
He's cut the strikeouts down 7%, which is really impressive. He's making more contact than ever at 79%. And he's actually spraying the ball a little bit better to help float that average. But just to harp on those splits once more, obviously the Dodgers are protecting him quite a bit. He's only got 22 plate appearances against lefties, but this is so cute. His WRC plus is 2 against lefties. I don't know. That just stood out to me.
It's adorable.
So I had to mention that. It is, right? That's the most adorable WRC plus I've ever seen.
League average is 100, by the way. Just so
it is, yeah. Yes. He's not good against lefties. But yeah, he definitely needs to be picked up. I think even 12-team leagues with the power, he could be beneficial if you have daily roster moves. So how about this next guy, Stephen Wright, Ron? He started just 2 games, but 6 relief appearances on the year, but has managed 29 and two-thirds innings pitched with a 1.21 ERA. He's also got a lot of great jokes. Stephen Wright, Ron, what do you think?
His comedy is very good. He's very underrated as a stand-up comedian, I think. And we've seen this from him before. I mean, obviously, he's not going to strike out a ton of guys. He's walking a few too many this season, and I think once the rotation is back to full strength health-wise, I think mainly Drew Pomeranz is the guy he's replacing. He's going to go back to mid-relief. So, I mean, he's a guy that I don't think I really have a whole lot of interest in just because of the lack of strikeouts. He is stranding 91% of runners, which I don't obviously look for that to be the case for very much longer. And he's only given up a 192 BABIP. So I think there's rougher days ahead for Mr. Wright if he's still in the rotation. And I think, you know, we're kind of seeing the best of him right now. And I think if you're just now getting around to picking him up, I think you might be kind of late to the party. So I don't really have a lot of interest here.
What I will say is that, you know, we're kind of discovering in this day and age that I just blanked on his name, the long relief pitcher for the Rays, Ron.
Right, this season?
Yes.
Ryan Yarbrough?
No.
Is that
He's the
about?
One that's pretty good. Like, he'll pitch 2-3 innings every time. This is horrible.
Just say Sergio Romo and you'll be right.
That's true, but no. Anyway, we're seeing people like him. And this is going to bother me, so I'm pulling up the depth chart. And I'm also mad you didn't know it off the top of your head. We've seen guys like him being more valuable to teams because the back end of pitching rotations, people aren't throwing as many innings. It's just not as pretty. Manandrees. So guys like Manandrese, however you pronounce it, they are becoming somewhat valuable because you're going to get good ratios out of them. Are also going to vulture a win every now and then because, again, with these back half of the rotation pitchers, they only go 4 or 5 innings half the time now, so they don't get the win either. So wins are tough to speculate on, but these vulture wins are going to become a lot more prominent. So with that said, Stephen Wright could hold some value because he's a guy that the Red Sox will utilize in the, you know, long relief role where he gets 2-3 innings at a time, doesn't hurt your ratios too much, if at all, and will vulture a win every now and then. So there's some value to be had there. If he's a starter, he's a knuckleballer. So, I mean, it's just kind of what you get out of him. I don't expect a whole lot. I expect a 3.5 ERA in this day and age with, you know, not a ton of strikeouts and a couple of walks here and there, but some okay statistics. So he's a guy that if you're desperate for pitching, then keep an eye on him, put him in your lineup, you know, use him while he's doing successfully. But he's not going to be the guy you plug in your lineup week after week to get good stats out of.
It's like that great pitcher list shirt. Never trust a knuckleballer.
Yeah,
it all depends. Yeah, I mean, it depends on how lucky you feel because you could get 6 earned runs in 2 innings or, you know, you could get a complete game shutout. You never know what you're going to get with a knuckleballer. And the knuckleballer doesn't know what you're going to get with a knuckleballer until he starts knuckling out there. He doesn't know what the hell's going to happen. So let's just talk about Stephen Wright. Like, I found one of his jokes on here that I'll just say in appreciation of him before I move on. This quote is, "I was Caesarean born. Can't really tell, although whenever I leave a house, I go through the window."
Wow. See, I didn't know anything about these joke things. Is this just a thing he does?
You don't know Stephen Wright? Like, he's like a legendary he's a deadpan comic.
Yeah, you'd know it's like his delivery too makes the joke too. If you heard you'd know immediately who he is.
Oh, I recognize the face. He looks a little bit like the Three Stooges. But yeah, I know him. Okay, it makes sense now. I didn't know if you meant like the pitcher was known for like making funny interviews or something or other.
Oh God, no. I imagine that Stephen Wright the pitcher is incredibly bland.
If you think nobody cares about you, try missing a couple of bill payments.
Yes, there. His jokes are great. So anyway, we've got two guys left. Dylan Covey is one of them. And since I went to Van twice, Ron, we'll go to you twice. So we'll shoot this one over to you first. He's actually on the mound tonight. I have not looked up his stat line, but through five games before tonight, he has a 2.22 ERA. So are you buying the Dylan Covey, Ron?
I think in a league, if I need a pitcher, he's a great candidate to add. I mean, he's another guy that the strikeouts aren't huge. Tonight, went seven innings, struck out five, did not allow a run, scattered hits. Yeah, so he had another good start tonight. So he's the guy, if you need an arm, I think of anybody on this list, he would be the one I'd be the most apt to put on my roster. And FIP and XFIP really aren't that far off his ERA. His ERA after today starts at 1.78, FIP sits at 2.17, and then XFIP's at 3.31. So I think he's a guy that I actually – there's a couple leagues. One of my leagues that I'm starting to kind of make a little move in the standings in, I have – Archer, Strasburg, and Darvish all in the DL. So he's a guy that I might start looking at in that league as well to add. But I think you could do a lot worse for yourself as far as guys you can add on waivers, but he's definitely my favorite on this list. And by the way, Van, the Rays question is a trick question because every fifth day, every guy in the bullpen is a mid reliever. So
fair enough, yeah.
Okay,
All right. Covey, I think, can be a sneaky pickup for a lot of teams. I think he's going to get to pitch. I mean, if they're going to throw out Lucas Giolito every week with his 8 ERA, then why won't they give Dylan Covey the chance to pitch? So, and I think he'll be okay. He's not going to be a superstar. Like you said, Ron, he doesn't strike out that many. The walks are at 3.49, you know, 3.5, 3, which isn't great, but it's okay if he keeps the home runs down, which he, I don't think he's allowed a home run this year. So obviously that's going to go up, but if he keeps him in check, he could be a pretty good starter. So I'm definitely taking a look at him in a lot of leagues where I need pitching help. You mentioned, too, that Strasburg is now hurt. Archer's out. Syndergaard may be out indefinitely because he's got a finger strain. So if you're getting hit hard by injuries, this is a good guy that you could look at picking up and filling in some innings.
Yes, we're all in agreement on this one. He's the most interesting guy on the waiver wire this week. He's picked up some velocity on that sinking fastball of his. He's throwing it more than ever as well. It's been a really good pitch for him. 69% ground balls is very nice, but he's not getting a ton of whiffs and not nearly enough to maintain anywhere near a strikeout per inning, which is close to where he was coming into today. So, you know, like you said, Ron, today five strikeouts in seven innings, that may be closer to what you should expect with Covey. So I think the upside is capped, but he could be, you know, maybe you're looking at a number three starter, at least in the short term until people get him figured out a little bit more. But I would be riding him for sure. Okay. So we're going to finish off the show with Clay Buchholz. The word feels like cancer rolling off my tongue because I have sworn him off several years ago. After he lit many of my teams on fire, I kept buying in. I kept being wrong. Ben, anything to see with Clay Buchholz this year, who has actually been surprisingly good so far?
It's a little bit of the Carlos Rodon effect here with me, in that I want nothing to do with him until I see prolonged success, maybe 1 or 2 years. And I'm not going to see that, so he's really not even on my periphery. I just don't find him interesting. The walks are way down this year, so maybe he's achieved a new level. I just don't think that's right. I think this is a really small sample size and corrections coming soon.
Okay, so in the rundown you sent us, Nate, I'll save Van the trouble of bleeping out the front part, but it essentially said, do we really have to talk about Clay Buchholz? I'm going to read you verbatim what my notes say. No.
Okay. Very good. I'll never touch him myself, but for what it's worth, I was looking at his pitch values, and the cutter has been really, really good for him. 22% whiffs and just a 0.074 isolated slugging or isolated power against that. But he's not missing a ton of bats, so not a huge ceiling in my opinion. And like I said, I've endured too much Clay Buchholz to ever come back. So I will never again touch him. Stream at your own risk. But that's going to do it for us, gentlemen. Let's get the plugs out of the way before we get out of here. Van, what have you got coming out this week?
Actually, I was supposed to have a week off, but then nobody notated it in FanTrax, so I'm going to try and squeeze something out tonight, which has been awful because this has been a long day. Did a Reddit AMA this afternoon. Did the Launch Angle podcast this afternoon. It's already up, so go check it out. This show, the Fantrax Dynasty Baseball Show, and all kinds of stuff going on at Fantrax HQ. So go check them out. And if you haven't set your league up on Fantrax yet, you need to, because you're missing out. We've got the commissioner tools, which provide, you know, all year leagues, all kinds of additional stuff that other leagues or other sites don't provide. So give us a shot, check us out, and head on over to FantraxHQ.com to find your writing, my writing, and the writing of other great gentlemen such as Jeff Zimmerman, Joe Pisapia, Al Melchior, etc.
Thanks for not mentioning me.
I said yours and mine.
Okay. You did a podcast, though, another podcast this week, Van.
Oh, yeah, I did. I guessed it on the FWO podcast, the Fantasy World Order. I don't think I've received that one yet, so it's not up yet, but they're going to send that to me tonight, I believe. We'll get it up, and it'll be up probably by the time you're listening to this one. So go give them a check. Pat was on our show, this show, a couple weeks ago, so he's the same guy. He runs it with a couple other guys, and yeah, had a good time. It was fun.
All right, Ron, what are you getting up this week?
Well, just real quick to piggyback on the Fantrax League thing is something I've noticed in a lot of the Facebook groups that I'm a member of, people getting excited because certain players are getting added to the Yahoo or ESPN databases. And we're not talking about guys that just got drafted in this last week. We're talking about guys that have been in the minors at least a year or so. Those guys are already
like
in
the how Juan Soto was not in the player database for days after he was called up.
Exactly, yeah. So basically we're talking about guys that have been in the Fantrax database since day one. So that's another added value for baseball and Fantrax. They've got everybody in there. The player pool is insanely deep. As far as what I've got coming up, you know, we're getting ready to do the Fantrax Dynasty Baseball here in a little bit. Bob Lung and I, as far as from a football standpoint, took a week off this week from the Consistency Podcast. But go get that consistency guide for your drafts. Get it on Amazon. Get it on Big Guy Fantasy Sports site. I did the NL player analysis for Fantastics last night. I've got, I think, NL again tomorrow night. And then Saturday, be doing some Fantastics there as well. So check me out there.
Get it up, yeah.
Yeah.
Is that what the Aussies say? Is that a thing?
I don't think that's at all what the Aussies say. They talk about Barbies and Knifey Spoony, and then they rip things off the back of a limousine and use it as a boomerang.
Kiwis.
That's right. Yeah, a lot of
the
kiwi
bird
talk
and
over
the
there.
Fruit.
The bush.
Let's see. My normal stuff. I got Fire and Ice coming out on Friday on Fantrax HQ, and then Saturday, Sunday over at Razzball. You can check out. I'm back this week after taking a weekend off. I'll be doing my two starter palooza coming out on Saturday, and on Sunday is my top 100 starting pitchers. I've been making furious notes trying to catch up from the days that I was gone. There will be many changes in the top 100, and Dylan Covey, I believe, is going to sneak onto that list. So stay tuned to go check that out. But until next week, ladies and gentlemen, may the fantasy gods shine upon you.